you have your Bibles, you can turn to Genesis chapter 39. If you grab the bulletin on your way in, there's also some teaching sheets where you can follow along with some of the main points of the message. Now, in the spring of 1951, the United States Military Academy at West Point was rocked by a scandal. And so it was the very academy that had built the core value of honor had to expel 90 cadets for cheating. 37 of those cadets were part of the football team. And coming out of World War II, the football team had become a symbol of national pride, and the team had gone 35-0-2 over three seasons, so they were doing really well. But it was determined that the cadets had created a cheating ring. They were sharing answers for difficult engineering and math tests. Some even got the answers ahead of time and then passed them along to others. And so when the scandal broke, West Point's honor code came front and center, which is a cadet will not lie, cheat, steal, or tolerate those who do. And that last phrase, tolerate those who do, meant that even silence was a breach of honor. And so the result was one of the largest purges in the history of the academy, including one of the cadets was Al Davis, a future owner of the Raiders. And we see how the Raiders turned out, right? Maybe it's just my bias. So as news came out of the scandal, it also came out that there were others who did not participate in the cheating, and this was even at the cost of being labeled a snitch or seeing their friends advance that cheated move ahead when you didn't cheat and you got passed over. So years later, one person who didn't cheat was being interviewed, and he said, "I didn't cheat, but I wanted to. I was tempted every day. I knew if I compromised here, I'd carry that with me into life." And as we look at the chapter today in Genesis chapter 39, we're going to see Joseph is far from home. He's alone. He's under pressure. And he's handed this opportunity to take something that he shouldn't. There's no parents watching him. There's no religious leaders. No one is nearby. No one would ever know. But Joseph knew, and God knows. And like the cadets who walked away from the cheating, he chose integrity, even though it would end up costing him everything at that time. And so today we're going to be looking at the story of Joseph with Potiphar's wife, and it's a case study of dealing with temptation. And so Joseph's example is one that all of us can learn from. And so whether you're struggling with sin right now, or whether you're doing really well right now, the reality is that we will all be tempted at times in our life. And so after all, Jesus, who never sinned, was tempted by Satan many times. So I would even say that if you are doing really well right now, if you're not struggling at the moment, I would warn you to pay extra close attention to what we're going to talk about today, because Satan is most likely looking for an opportunity to trip you up. And so let me go ahead. I'm going to work through chapter 39. Now, as you recall, in chapter 37, Joseph was sold by his mean brothers into slavery. He was then carried off to Egypt, and then he was sold to the house of Potiphar. And by the way, a lot of people pronounce it Potiphar. It seems like the more correct is Potiphar. And I'm probably going to, I grew up saying Potiphar, so you're probably going to hear me mess it up sometimes. So just to warn you ahead of time. And so the first few verses sort of establish what's happening with Joseph. And this is Joseph's new setting. And so let's start in verse 1. Now Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, the officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, had bought him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him down there. So Joseph ends up with this, really this high-ranking Egyptian officer. Potiphar was like the chief of police or the head of security. So that's the household that he's ended up in. Verse 2, and the Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. So even though Joseph was in a very bad situation, we see here that God had not abandoned him. Verse 3, his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. So again, even though he was a slave, we see that God is still with him and blessing him, and that God blessed all that Joseph did. Now, as I look out here into the congregation, I'm happy to say that I don't see any of you that are slaves today. So really, the reality is that none of us are as bad off as Joseph. But if we think about this from the standpoint of Joseph, even though he was a slave, he was working in the house of Potiphar. All of us have some sort of job, whether that's at work or in the home or in school. So all of us are working in some way. And we all have responsibilities. And I want you to know that if you have put your faith in Jesus Christ, that God is with you while you're working, just as he was with Joseph. And so let that be an encouragement to you, that even if you're in a job that you don't like, that you go home and you're like, Lord, please get me out of this job. God is still with you, and he can still work through you at that job. But also, so I want it to be an encouragement, but I also want it to be a challenge to you. So even if you're working on your own, God still sees what you're doing. Even if you're your own boss, God still sees you. And so even if you would never get caught by any human, God is there. And so as Christians, let's live as people with a higher standard. Now likewise, just as God is with you, he blesses you. And you're called then to take that blessing on to other people. We saw that all throughout Genesis, and that's a theme all throughout the Bible. And that's what we see with Joseph as well, that God blesses Joseph, and in turn, the entire household is blessed through him. This in turn makes Potiphar like Joseph a lot. We're going to see this now in verse 4. So Joseph found favor in his sight and attended him, and he made him an overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. From the time that he made him overseer in the house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in house and field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's charge. And because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food he ate. That's a pretty good life right there, right? I was on at a conference this week, and we had our conference taken care of and sort of our schedule. And that was sort of my concern as well. One decision that my wife and I had to make is, what are we going to eat for lunch today? What are we going to eat for dinner? And it's a given. It's barbecue. We're in North Carolina. Come on. My wife doesn't like barbecue, but hey, for better or for worse, that's why we did the vows years ago. So over a period of years, Joseph moves up the ranks in the household until he's the head servant there. And as bad as Joseph has had it, being sold into slavery, being ripped from his home, really, honestly, he has it pretty good right now. He's doing all right. So Joseph had found success in his life, and he's well-liked. And all things considered, he's doing pretty well. And that leads us right into the temptation. So verse 6b says, Now, Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. Don't you just get annoyed at those type of those people? They're just handsome, like just born handsome. Come on. So he's one of the ones that are just blessed with good looks. Most likely he got it from his mom, who was called a beautiful woman. And so he's got the good looks. And so without even trying, his good looks and really probably his success as well, then makes him very desirable to one particular person in the house. Verse 7. And after a time, his master's wife, so this is Potiphar's wife, cast her eyes on Joseph and said, "Lie with me." Well, talk about being abrupt, right? So Potiphar's wife, who is never named in this passage, wants Joseph. And let's just remember the context. Joseph is far from home. He's been rejected by his family. He's been sold into slavery. He's all alone. And by this point, he's in his 20s. And out of nowhere, his boss's wife boldly comes up to him and wants him. And if there was ever a time to justify one's actions, to do what she's asking, this would be the time. After all, he had been dealt a pretty bad hand. I mean, shouldn't he be allowed to have a little fun? And he was young. He was in his young 20s, early 20s by then. And he had desires. And so what's the problem with doing this? He was in the Egyptian culture where it was possibly more acceptable to do stuff like this. But this leads us into the next section where, so the temptation has come and it's going to continue to come. But we see now that Joseph resists the temptation. And as I mentioned before, Joseph, what he's going to be doing gives us a case study on how to resist temptation. And so as we go through these verses, I'm going to use Joseph's example to give each of us guidance on resisting temptation. So here's the first one. That we need to know ahead of time what God calls wicked. Verse 8. But he, Joseph, refused. And he said to his master's wife, "Behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house. And he has put everything that is in my charge. He is not greater in the house than I am. Nor has he kept anything from me except you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" So notice that when the time came, Joseph is not stuck there wondering in the moment if what she was asking for was sin or not. She boldly came up to him. It was probably some sort of ambush where, you know, he's just in the house doing something. And she walks in the room, closes the door, and says, "Lie with me." And he said right away, he knew that it was wicked and sinful. So Joseph knew ahead of time. He didn't need to think about it in that urgent moment. And what I'm about to say is going to sound ultra basic, but it's really the foundation of avoiding sin. And that is that in order to avoid sin, we must know what sin is. Right? Mind blown. So the problems start when we don't identify what sin really is. When we don't know what sin is. Now in 1948, in Clearwater Beach, Florida, people began noticing some strange footprints in the sand along the shoreline. There were these weird, giant, three-toed tracks. And the footprints were deep enough that people wondered what kind of massive thing had come out of the ocean and was walking along their shore. And so the newspaper picked it up. And speculation grew. Some people thought it was a 15-foot-tall penguin. That would have been cute. Others thought it was a prehistoric dinosaur. Some thought it was a mutated marine creature. Some even theorized that it was an alien. So these footprints randomly appeared on the shore for the next 10 years and then disappeared. And so what in the world was it? Well, the answer didn't come until 40 years later, in 1988, when a man named Tony Signorini came forward with a confession. And he and his boss had made these 30-pound iron shoes modeled after dinosaur fossils. And so he would then go to the beach, put them on, and then sort of do the moonwalk. He would walk backwards along the shore to create the footprints. Now you see, not knowing causes all sorts of chaos, doesn't it? This is true for footprints in the sand, but it's also true when it comes to sin. And how do we know what sin is as Christians? Well, the primary way that we identify sin is through the Bible. The psalmist writes in Psalm 119:11, saying, "I have stored up your word in my heart that I might not sin against you." So listen, the more that you know the Bible, the more that you know what is sin, what we call sin. And I want to take this even a step further and point out that a really bad way to try to identify sin is just through your feelings. And our culture is really big on feelings right now. They're sort of like, if it feels right, it must be okay. Just do it. It's not fair, and so that must be right. But feelings are not nearly stable enough to guide us through into truth. And so as a church, as Christians, we must be grounded. We must be anchored, and that anchor is the Word of God. That's how we know ahead of time what sin is. The next example that we can take away from Joseph's life is this. Don't flirt with sin. Verse 10. "And as she spoke to Joseph day after day, he would not listen to her to lie beside her or to be with her." So let's remember, he's a slave in the household, so it's not like he could avoid her completely. But verse 10 shows us the stubbornness of Joseph, that he would not consider it even one bit. Not even to do the big sin, so to speak, but the little sins. You notice, she's like, just lie with me. Just come next to me. Let's cuddle. And he would not even do that. And for many people, big sins do not just randomly occur out of the blue. Almost every big sin is held up by countless little sins, little flirtations. And so these are the flirty sins. The ones that take us near the sin, the big sin, but not quite all the way. And I want to challenge you to not even flirt with sin. Because all the little sins, all these little flirts build up over time. Now, I don't know if you have this problem but at your house, but it's the time of the year where it's moving day for the ants, and the ants have all moved into our house. And sadly, this morning, there's been ants in my office at church also. And sadly, this morning, I made my oatmeal, and then I took my agave sugar, and I poured it, and apparently the ants had gotten in my sugar, and I poured it out onto my oatmeal. So I figured extra protein today. So. No, I didn't have breakfast because the ants got to it first. Now, ants are just tiny little things, but I read that they are super strong compared to their size. And working together, a colony of ants can do amazing things. For example, ant colonies can move up to 50 tons of dirt in a single year. And so that's equivalent to the weight of 10 elephants. So all from these little tiny ants working all day together as a group. And listen, that's how big sins start in your life. It starts by letting in these little sins that you start just flirting with. And over time, they grow and they start building up bigger and bigger. I heard one pastor tell the story this week of speaking to an engaged couple. He was talking to them about purity before they got married. And they were planning, as an engaged couple, to go on a cruise together before they got married. And the pastor told them that that was not a good idea. That was not wise. And they said, don't worry. We got separate rooms. And so they went on their cruise. They came back and they asked to meet with the pastor. And when they sat down, they told him that they had actually given in to temptation. And the pastor looked at them and said, no, the moment you bought those tickets, you gave in to temptation. And I want to challenge you that if you want to avoid big sins, don't flirt with the little ones. Don't keep them close to you. Because if you do, you are setting yourself up for trouble. Here's the third lesson that we can learn from Joseph's life here in this situation. That is, be willing to flee from temptation. Verse 11. But one day, when he went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was there in the house, she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." She's a very single-track lady there. But he left his garment in her hand and fled and got out of the house. So clearly, Joseph was very careful. He would not even be alone with her in the house. But this likely took place over a long period of time. He was in Potiphar's house for probably 10, 11 years. And so eventually Joseph ends up getting tricked by her. He's in the house alone with the wife. And now she doesn't just beg him. She doesn't just ask him to cuddle with her. What does she do? She grabs him. And so what does Joseph do? Well, I want to try to make this feel more real to you all right now. So I'm going to invite my wife up to the stage here to play the role of Potiphar's wife. She's been looking forward to this all week. She's like, she's like, can you put me in front of them more often? Here we go. I have a nice little robe on. Do I look like Joseph here? Okay. So I have my robe, and all right, so go ahead and grab me. All right, come on. Grab me like you mean it here. Grab me like you want me, here. There. Now, this is feeling more like home now. Sorry, am I making you? All right, so what does Joseph do in that moment? Is he like, hey, maybe we shouldn't do this. What do you think? Is that what he's doing now? He's like, I'm sort of thinking maybe we should stop. I'm not so sure about this. This might be a bad idea. Or does he think, I wonder how far I can go before it's actually sin? Is that what Joseph does? Does he just think about it? Does he just wonder if maybe he should stop? Does he just reason for a moment? You're not holding on like you want me. Come on, there you go. No, he throws off his outer garment. All right, help me out here. Okay, now you can go. There you go. He throws it off and he runs for his life. He's running and running. And if we had a moving camera, I would run right down the stage there. But we don't. So let's thank my wife here. Now, the New Testament gives similar language, and it's maybe giving this account even thinking about Joseph. Paul writes in 2 Timothy 2:22, says, "So walk slowly away from youthful passions." No, he says, "Flee youthful passions." 1 Corinthians 6:18, Paul says, "Flee from sexual immorality." Not just get away when you can or walk slowly. Flee. Run. Now, how do we flee? Well, it may involve literally running out of the room from something or someone. Or it may be less dramatic in the moment. It may involve turning off your phone and putting it in another room to avoid temptation from something on it. It may be something more intentional, like getting rid of the source of temptation from your life. It may involve saying no to an invitation that you are, so you're never in the position to be tempted in the first place. It may involve breaking off a relationship. It may involve confessing to a trusted Christian friend or leader that you're struggling in this area to make it more difficult for you to return to it. So whatever it is, let's be intentional, church, about fleeing from temptation, not flirting with it. Now, after all this takes place, we get to what I call the fallout. I'm going to go through this fairly quickly. As soon as she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and he had fled out of the house, she called to the men of her household and said, "See, he has brought among us a Hebrew to laugh at us. He came into me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And as soon as he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried out, he left his garment beside me and fled and got out of the house. Then she laid up his garment beside her until his master came home. And she told him," this is Potiphar, "the same story, saying, 'The Hebrew servant whom you have brought among us came in to me to laugh at me. And as soon as I lifted up my voice and cried, he left his garment beside me and fled out of the house.'" Now, is that really what happened? No. His wife, the Potiphar's wife, is lying and manipulating the situation. And here's Potiphar's response. As soon as his master heard the words that his wife spoke to him this way, "This is the way your servant treated me," his anger was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him into prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. So Joseph is falsely accused, thrown into prison, and loses his position again. Unfortunately, Joseph is going to sit there in prison for multiple years after this. And we're going to finish the rest of the chapter next week when we continue into the next part of the story. But before I close, I want to ask one question that leads into a second question. And so the question that I want to ask is, what if I already gave into temptation? So I've been talking about avoiding temptation, but what if you're far past that point? And to answer the question, I need to first ask the question that I've been asking every week as we go through Genesis, and that is, where is Christ in this passage? And I talked last time about Joseph being a type, being representing or pointing us to Jesus. And so when it comes to Joseph and to temptation, there are some similarities to Jesus. For example, both Joseph and Jesus resist temptation. So Jesus was tempted by Satan, yet Jesus did not sin. Second, both are falsely accused. People lied to get Jesus arrested and convicted, just like Joseph. And then third, both suffer for resisting temptation, But in doing so, they save others because of it. The author of Hebrews says, "For because he himself has suffered when tempted, he is able to help those who are being tempted." So Jesus understands what it is like to be tempted. But even more, Jesus died to save us from our sin. And so now, when you and I sin, we are forgiven through Jesus. So going back to the first question, what should you do if you've already given into temptation? And the answer is simply, go to Jesus. There is forgiveness through him. There is new life and new hope and new mercies through him. Now, I hope as you go to him that you also work on getting those sins out of your life. But listen, if you just try to get the sins out of your life on your own before you go to Jesus, it's going to be for nothing. So start out by going to Jesus. And so if you are struggling today with sin, turn to the one who conquered sin. Hebrews 4, the author says, "For we do not have a high priest," speaking of Jesus, "who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin." So what should we do? "Let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us," or to help in time of need. The reality is that we all mess up at times. We all intentionally are going to walk away from God at times in our life. But when that happens, the worst thing that you can do is keep on walking. So turn back to him, because there is mercy and grace available to those who need it. Let me close with a story that Jesus tells in the New Testament. Tells a story about a son who took a bunch of money from his father and then left to go explore the world and have a lot of fun. And for a time, this son, with all this money, had a lot of fun. He experienced all that life could offer. And so that was until the money ran out. And then all of a sudden, with no money, his friends left him, and he was far away, destitute from home. No money, and so he got a job working with pigs to survive. And one day, he's there hanging out with the pigs, dirty and miserable, and he begins to think to himself, "I would be better off as a servant at my father's house than I would be here." And so he leaves the pigs, and the memories of the parties, and he heads home, planning to ask his father just to let him become a servant in the house. Now later on, as he gets closer, his father spots him from a distance, walking towards the house. And his father doesn't look at him angry. Bible says that the father is overjoyed. And he runs to his son, and he runs up to his dirty, stinking son who's covered in pig poop and all sorts of other stuff, and he hugs him. And let me close by giving the last few verses of that story that Jesus gives. "And the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to the servants, 'Bring quickly the best robe and put it on him. And put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet. And bring the fattened calf and kill it. And let us eat and celebrate. For my son was dead and he is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate." And I hope that you never get to the point where you walk away from God. I hope that you resist temptation and keep on resisting it. And I hope that you get into Scripture and understand what God says is sin. But when you do mess up, I've got good news for you. You don't have to come back as a second-class citizen to him and just be a servant. God welcomes you back with open arms. Not only does he welcome you back, he doesn't just welcome you back begrudgingly. He celebrates when you return to him. And so he is there to extend mercy and grace to those who need it, who turn back to him. And so for those of you here today that have put your faith in Christ but maybe have wandered away, I want to encourage you. There is mercy and grace available to you. Turn back to him. And for others here today, maybe you've never turned to him, but you think you are well past being able to do that. I want to tell you, you are never far too past his mercy and grace. So turn to him. Give him your life. The Bible says that if you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, that you will be saved. And so you can do that even right now. I'm going to go ahead and spend a moment now on prayer. Worship team, you can come on up.